I'm Matt Godbolt.
And I'm Ben Rady.
And this is To's Compliment, a programming podcast. Hey, Ben.
Hey, Matt.
So there's a lot of things going on in the world right now, in the tech world particularly. Some of the FAANG companies are downsizing, and we are, well, at least the little company we work for, are one of the few places that are actually hiring at the moment. And this is not officially supported by our company in any meaningful way, but we have definitely...
This is not an advertisement.
This is definitely not an advert. Yeah, it's not an advert. Yes. But you and I have been doing a lot of... You have been doing an awful lot of resume filtering and interviewing,
and then interviews.
I seem to be at the end of the interview pipeline, which means that I get the sort of the ones that have already been filtered through, the folks that have already passed a whole bunch of other interviews. So I get one view. You're doing a lot of earlier stage interviews, but
yeah,
I figured we should talk about that a little bit. And I know you have opinions and thoughts, seeing as all you seem to do is read resumes these days.
Yeah, read resumes and interview people. It's like a good. It's like a good third of my job these days, which is not where I want it, but it's sort of like, you know, we are in this very fortunate position of, you know, having a company that is looking to hire, and, you know, the rest of the world is not like that, and sort of that, you know, creates some opportunity for us to maybe, because, you know, my perception, you've worked for Google, I've never worked for like a big tech company, right? With like, you know, tens of thousands of employees and stuff like this, right? Certainly my perception of these layoffs is that, you know, if you're going to lay off 10,000 people and you're going to make the decision to do that and execute it in like a couple of months, which is, it sort of seems
to be the timeline.
Here,
yeah.
Like, you're not making really fine grained decisions about which people you're letting go and which people you're not, you know, you're just going to cut whole departments and you're going to be like, there's going to be some great people in here. And maybe we could have retained them if we wanted to do this exhaustive re-interview process or some other sort of thing.
But
we're not going to do that.
By and large, they have to use broad strokes to.
Right, right.
Which is why you get some of these terrible stories about folks who've been there a long time, or they were like in the labor ward at the time when they discover that they've been cut, which means that like no one really thought about it. Because I don't believe that even in the most capitalistic society, anyone is that horrible to humans. Yep. It just is how it came out because there's... It's big swathes of companies and without the personal touch that you would otherwise hope to have, especially after a long time in the company. But nevertheless, that's where we are.
Yes, and that is what's happening right now. And so, you know, this is a sort of brief moment in time for us where while all of these layoffs are happening, some of which might be kind of arbitrary and therefore laying off like very talented and experienced people, at the same time, we are trying to grow, and sort of there's this like brief window where it's like, oh, well, we might have an opportunity here to get a whole bunch of great people. And so that's why I'm spending a third of my day
reading
through resumes and doing interviews and other things, because I fully expect that, you know, 6 months from now or whatever, when the market has kind of settled out a little bit, that it will sort of be back to normal and
I mean, let's hope so for the wider economy. Let's hope so. Yeah. Even though it's lovely to have the choice right now for us.
I think would be wise to operate under the assumption that this is going to sort of return to the way it was, maybe not 6 months ago or a year ago when it was, you know, particularly hot, but like, you know, the way it was like 2 or 3 years ago, right? Like when we would still sort of have to look pretty hard to find. We didn't have this huge influx of candidates. You know, take advantage of the opportunity while you can. So it has definitely been very top of mind for me. I've been doing a lot more interviews. I've been setting up new interview pipelines and trying to figure out how to do that, talking with recruiters about how to, you know, get the best candidates and how to filter them effectively, while also trying to keep in mind that, like, we have other jobs to do. We have a bunch of stuff to build, and everyone involved in this process is also doing those other things. So everything we do is a trade-off here.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. But, yeah, it's... I mean, there's even the old trade-off of, like, you know, hiring another person. I think you said it well when someone said to you, can we just hire some more people and then it'll go faster? And you're like, no, I can show you a book that will tell you exactly why the opposite thing will happen. So, you know, there's
exactly
that to balance
right.
as well, right? You know, the time that we take to interview folks is lost time in some way if they don't work out. It's important time, but it's not time that you're building stuff. And when you hire someone new, you have a tax on you for a while they come up to speed and while you get them the opportunity to grow and become more of a net positive than somebody who is asking, like, where's the bathroom? I don't even know where the... How do I go? How does the coffee machine work? Ah!
Right, yes.
And
yes.
So on.
Well, and our coffee machine is particularly complicated.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, and I think one of the things that everyone looks at when they're looking at these, like, a potential candidate, is sort of like how long it's going to take you to get them up to sort of that net positive
right.
level. Right. And right. for somebody that's right out of school, like, you're making more of an investment in them.
Absolutely.
And it's going to take a longer period of time. But for somebody with more experience, like, you know, part of the reason you're hiring people with experience is that you don't have to teach them as much. And they should hopefully get to that point sooner. But it's true for pretty much every... I've never had someone that joined a team that I was on. And like day one, it was like, oh, we're getting more out of you than we're putting in. Mm-hmm. Right. Like that just...
It just
I've
doesn't
never
happen.
Seen that,
you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's only like weeks, but it's never like the first day. So, you know, and then with people who are right out of school, like I expect that process to take months and sometimes even years to really truly get to the point where it's like you are producing the level of quality that I would want and expect for this particular type of project. It can vary.
Mm-hmm.
And you're doing it, you know, at a level that means that, you know, for every 2 hours of guidance and instruction and peer review and all of the other forms of input that I'm possibly giving you, I'm getting more than 2 hours out, right?
Right.
Like that can easily take months to get to that point with somebody who's right out of school.
Right. Understandably. I mean, like, that's it. There are whole processes that vary from company to company. I mean, you and I are quite lucky that, you know, we've found company, well, we've worked at the same companies, and so therefore we've brought the practices that we know and love with us.
Right.
So we kind of like, hey, this is a familiar process. I wonder why. Oh, because we invented it in the last company.
Right.
But
right,
like, for
yep.
somebody who's just fresh out of school, just even like doing pull requests and understanding how that process works, or
right.
you know, how do you design things in a way that is, or what are the things that are important in a piece of software that you're not just going to hand in at the end of a semester and never
right.
have to look at again, but is going to haunt you for the next 6 years. You know, what do you, how does that change the way you write software and all of the things in between there? So so what kind of, I mean, how does one go about, for say, let's say a mid to senior person, not the new grads that we just talked about, because I think we can all see the shape of what that looks like and we all understand some of the things that they're going to perhaps not have been exposed to, but you can get somebody who's been working for 3, 4, 5 years, and then how do we look for the things that are going to say it'll be weeks rather than months before you are we're getting more energy out of you than we're putting in, you know, the sort of fusion
right,
reactor
right,
of
right.
your brain will be
yes,
a net positive.
Exactly. I mean, so I think that we do it a little differently than a lot of other firms do it. I get a lot of feedback from people that have been through our interview process, and they were like, wow, this was really different. Like, you guys didn't do the regular sort of like lead code, hacker, rank, whatever, silly, you know, I know those things are so gross, but it's like, you guys didn't do that. You did something very different. And it's like, yeah, like, you know, what we do, I think is actually kind of unique in that, like, our sort of, you know, our process is pretty normal at the beginning. It's very typical at the beginning, you know, with people send us a resume, we have somebody call them up and we say like, hey, like, where do you live and where do you want to work and what have you done? And just sort of, you know, make sure that they're a real person because, you know, we've had that.
Yeah. We found,
And then just sort of generally get a sense from them of like what they're looking for and you sort of an introduction call. And then very soon after that, usually immediately after that, we send them a programming test. And this programming test is open source. It's on our public GitHub.
Mm-hmm.
We share it with everybody. And part of the reason that we do that, and I know, I don't know if you've had the same experiences, you know, finance can be a little bit of an old boys club, right? Where it's sort of like people know people. And you get these things of like, oh, yeah, the interview process over at Jump is like this, and they're going to ask you these kinds of questions. And that's like, I think, profoundly unfair. It's sort of like you're just giving an advantage to the people that are already in the industry beyond their industry experience. Like, this isn't industry experience. It's not like you have depth, you know, in-depth knowledge
it's
of how equity
you
markets
know Barry,
work, and that's what's giving you.
Whatever, yeah. And they say, you know, they said, well, this is what they asked me when I came in on the way in, and, you know. And
right.
There are websites nowadays that share some of this stuff and information, which is a kind of another thing where it's like, well, if that's going to happen anyway, let's just put it out there in the open, and then we've leveled the playing field for everyone.
Exactly. We're leveling the playing field for the people who might think that, like, you know, digging into those things might be slightly, not dishonest, but just like circumventing the process, right?
Right.
And it's like, no, we're going to make sure that
I could imagine
is...
myself feeling that, like, well, I've noticed, oh gosh, even like this, right? Oh, I just noticed that they didn't know that their interview test is open source and publicly available. I won't look at it. Right. And then would be like my thoughts about the process, but that's, you know, but yes. No, we're doing it on a purpose. It's there so that everyone can see it.
Exactly. So we have this very open process, and the, you know, we ask people to do the problem, they do the problem, they submit it. And then the follow-on to that is also, I think, pretty unique in that, like, a lot of what the follow-on interviews do are they're focused on programming and the programming process. So something that I see a lot with kind of like technical interviews and programming interviews, especially like pair programming style interviews, sort of dysfunctional version of pair programming style interviews, is that you're basically just watching somebody code as quickly as they possibly can, right? It's like, how much functionality can you cram into a 60-minute or 90-minute or 2-hour, God forbid, programming session? And they've got this, like, you know, checklist of, like, were they able to implement this? Were they able to implement this? Were they able to implement this? And if you get all the way through the checklist, then you pass the interview. And if you don't, then you're not fast enough and you fail. And it's like, well, if that's what this job is going to be like, well, then just fail me now, because I don't want
that job, right?
I don't want to be writing code as quickly as I possibly can for 2 hours straight with somebody looking over my shoulder.
I was going to say, breathing down your neck the whole time.
Terrible.
It's just like, that's not a normal way. I don't write that way.
Yeah, right. So we do the sort of, like, you know, pairing style, collaborative style programming interviews. But the purpose of that is to evaluate their process, not their result, right? We're not looking at, like, how much code they can crank out. They're looking at, like, how do you think about software design? How do you think about testing? How do you think about performance? How do you think about data structures? Can you communicate these ideas to other people? Can you take your ideas and put them into code, right? Can you manipulate code in order to make your ideas real, right? And it's not about, like, oh yeah, you implemented the 3 sorting algorithms, but not the 4th one, so you didn't make it, right?
Yep.
So I think that's pretty unique, and I definitely think that gives us a good sense of, like, in those early days when someone has just joined a company and they're going to, like, come and they're going to work with me, and I'm going to be like, let's work on this problem together. I'm going to probably know in the first day what that trajectory is going to be over the next few months. I don't know if you've sort of had that experience of sort of like, yeah, after the first day, it's like, yeah, this guy might pick up a little slower or, you know.
That's... It's definitely something. I mean, this is more an interview thing, as I've often, by the time I see a candidate, they've been through the various filters that come naturally out of the programming side of the test, of the interview, I should say. But yeah, definitely something I like to do is find something which is kind of on the border of something that somebody might know, but, like, it's definitely not critical. So, I don't know, if they say they have Java experience, they say, oh, tell me a little bit about what it means to, you know, Java versus, say, a real compiled language. And I know, like, you could write a book on the answer to that question, right? That's the thing.
Right.
But I want to push them until they get to, like, an obvious point where they don't know anymore. And then if I know something, I'll maybe say, oh, this is how that works. Now, often it's, you know, some minutiae of the garbage collector, or it's something in Python about how reference counting works, or anything like that. And I'll try and teach them something, just 2 minutes, you know, nothing. I mean, obviously, I like to do that anyway. That's fun for me. But
I
try and make it so that later on in the interview, I call back and I see whether or not they can extrapolate from the new information that they've been given. Oh, does it work the same way as the thing you just taught me over here? And I'm like, oh, it does actually. Yeah, great. You know, and that's a very good sign for me that they can pick up things on the fly. And obviously it's difficult because interviews are under pressure.
Yeah.
And
it's not necessarily
an out that they don't, but it's a good sign for me. And it contributes to a positive signal from a candidate amongst all of the other things, right? But
Yep.
It's difficult, right?
And I mean, interviews are just inherently a kind of process where you're just going to get a lot of things wrong, right? You hopefully err on the side of not hiring people who aren't a good fit and therefore reject people who might be. Like, that's the sort of smart way to do this.
It's
but
difficult.
It kind of sucks for everybody.
It sucks if you're the candidate, right? It sucks if you're the candidate. You were like, well, I was on the fence. And you know, and I think, you know, we've all seen candidates that have either we've passed on and then have thrived outside. Or, you know, one has stuck one's neck out for somebody because you are the one person who gave them the 5-star thumbs up, we have to hire them immediately. And everyone else is like, man, I'm not really sure. And, you know, you stick your neck out and then they get hired and then it's like, oh my gosh, it's amazing how we got on with before this person was hired, right? And that's a nice feeling, but there's always like one quadrant of the the thing that you don't get information on. So you don't know about the unknown unknowns. Well, what about all those people that didn't interview very well at all and no one stuck their neck out and then they didn't hear about them ever again, but would have been amazing, all right? And really, really hard to get that right. But, you know, ultimately you've got to protect the business at one level and also the working environment that you're going to be bringing a new person into. And so, you know, although it's unfortunate for the candidates, maybe if you're you have to round down and say, well, I'm sorry, this is not going to work out this time. I hate it. Everything about it is awful.
Everything about it is awful. I totally agree. And it does kind of work out sometimes to be this sort of like subtractive process where you're putting people through these various examinations, and all along the way, you're expecting sort of like, yep, this is good, yep. And you sort of get to the end, and it's sort of like, well, we've ran out of tests, so we're going to hire you.
Yeah, and that's, you know, nobody really wants to be like, you didn't do anything wrong, therefore we hired you. But way, I mean, again, I'm at the end, I'm typically towards the end of the interview pipeline just because of the way things are set up. So I have a very artificial view of these incredibly great candidates that effectively that's how I feel. I feel like they've already come to me. I read through all the notes of everyone and I'm like, everyone loves this person. I'm basically looking to see whether or not I can work with them, which is an important thing. And I'm all the things that we just talked about in terms of their learning or whatever. And then I'm just here to say, yeah, everyone else was right. Great. Let's bring them on board or whatever. And I don't get a great way of calibrating how good that person is compared to all the other good people. You know, like if you've sifted out like 95% of the people and I'm always seeing the top 5%, then I'm going, am I just too lenient here? Are these people all great?
A great antidote to that phenomena that we're talking about here is this sort of yes, but not for me, right? When you get feedback from people in an interview process or like, I think this person would be a great addition to the company, but I don't want to work with them, right?
Yeah.
And that's kind of like rounds down to no in a way. Now, that's not universally true. There are definitely situations in which you have like very specific fits for people that would work out better in one area and in another area. But at least in my mind, when I'm sort of looking at that feedback from the group after the interview process is complete, like there better be at least one person and hopefully multiple people that are like, I would be happy to work with this person.
Or even day. I would champion them. You know, I would write a no somewhere along the line for this person. Yeah, that's a great signal.
Exactly. Yeah. And if you don't have that, you might have fallen into this trap of it's not that the person is actually a really great fit. It's just that all along the way, they were like, well, I guess good enough.
Yeah.
And at the end, it's sort of like, well, I guess we need to give them an offer now. I don't know. Like, that's not a great outcome from that process. You need to have something, I think, a little bit more. You need to have an advocate at the end of the process to say, like, you know, this, if no one else wants this person, I will gladly take them. Please, 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 can they be on my team?
Right. And in fact, I see on a recent candidate that went through our pipeline, you made that exact point, which I thought, so you're putting your money where your mouth is, quite literally here.
That's true. And I mean, beyond that, like, one of the things that I think there's a lot of economic value in is making interviews both humane and really fun.
Right, for certain.
For two reasons. One is people, you know, interviews are just super stressful. And especially engineers, like, we're hiring them to be able to sometimes think very deeply about very complex problems. And an interview is not the sort of emotional state, hopefully, that you're going to be in when you're working at a job. And so, you know, like it's like a very well-known thing. You know, people under stress, their cognitive abilities drop. They stop being able to think of more creative ideas. I myself, in my career, have had multiple situations in which I've had some ongoing production issue, and I log into an SSH into a box, and I just get dumber. Like,
oh my gosh.
I forget the names of commands. I like start transposing things, and I have to double and triple and quadruple check the things that I would normally just be able to do without thinking, right? And that kind of stress absolutely happens in interviews, and it can really distort your picture of a candidate. And so I think one of the things that's really important as a way to sort of make create a little bit of an antidote for that, I mean, you're never going to be able to completely do it, is you have to think about your interview process and how you're going to make it interesting and fun and engaging and something that, like, is a challenge, but is also, you know, getting your mind into that mode of solving interesting problems and talking about interesting things, as opposed to the like, oh my God, I'm making a fool of myself. I can't remember the answer to this question. I used to know this. Oh my God, what's happening?
Right. You want to set up terrible. A situation where you're like, this is something I go to pains to say, like, you know, we understand it's a stressful place. So, you know, if you can't remember it exactly, if you don't get the right term for this thing, if you know it exists, that's good enough for me. I'm not here to test you on this. And like, especially if we're doing any kind of like live code type stuff, I'm like, I'm not looking to see if you've remembered the semicolon or if there is the brackets are matched or whatever. That's unimportant here.
Right,
I trust
right.
that you would, with an IDE, you would actually do the right thing and tend to avoid those things anyway.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think there's two things that go into that. There is the, first of all, as you say, humane. I like the idea of being humane. This is another human being who is stressed out and worried. And, you know, your job is to say, are they a good fit for our company? Which is, unfortunately, puts you in a slightly antagonistic position in a way.
Yeah, yep.
But there's a sort of second point here, which is like the vast majority of people that one interviews, I mean, certainly, I mean, again, my own position in the pipeline notwithstanding, but the vast majority won't pass the filter at some point along the way. And then, you know, the HR department is going to have to make the awkward call to say, thanks very much, but it's not a fit for us, or however they do it. I'm sure they're much better than I am at phrasing bad news to people. But
yes.
I think it's great. Another part of that humanity, the humaneness, I think, is to make sure the person who's been interviewed felt that everything went fairly for them and that they come away feeling like it was a good conversation. That was okay, actually, even though I didn't get it. Maybe it was just a cultural thing. Maybe I didn't quite understand the thing. Maybe the role wasn't a fit for me. Not like, oh my God, those people are awful. You know, nobody wants that to happen on either side. And that's a difficult thing to pull off when you are in this sort of antagonistic situation. You know, you want people to kind of walk away and say, oh, well, maybe next time, or that kind of feel, or something like that.
Right,
they're feeling still positive about their experience.
Yeah.
And so being interviewing humanely is a great way of allowing that to be, well, giving an opportunity to have that experience, have the candidate have that kind of an experience. I mean, I've seen things before. I've sat in other people's interviews, not at this company, but at one a couple ago, where somebody asks a question and then they will sit sort of silently just staring out the candidate. And I felt awkward as the sort of like, like the other person in the interview, like learning how to interview. I'm like, give the guy a break. Now, I'm probably more likely to step in and say, oh, well, maybe I can help you a bit early. And that's something that's on me to learn and whatever. But like, it feels extremely like I'm looking for the one word phrase that is the exact answer for me. And I'm just sort of going to wait for you to say it. And I think that feels too.
Yeah. You know, maybe this is just my own personal opinion, but the time that you have in interviews with candidates is precious. You're using their time and you're using your time. And the question, as we said at the very start of this conversation, is I need to get a sense of what their process is going to be like in the first few weeks and months of the company, right? As they're coming on, as they're ramping up, as they're getting to a point where they're valuable and useful and making a positive contribution, what is that going to be like and how long is it going to take? And for me, that precious interview time, I want to simulate that as much as I possibly can. And I certainly don't plan when they start of asking them very one-sided questions and then sitting in silence with my hand on my chin going what is the answer to this? Like,
right.
That's not how their first few
it's
weeks
a collaborative,
are going to go.
It should be a collaborative thing. And you're really,
right. So I want to try to make that as sort of as realistic as I can, as collaborative as I can, and as close to I can as the first few months. And I am trying to do some things to basically like compress that time, you know, compress like weeks of that collaborative time into like an hour by doing a little bit more things that are a little bit more directed and a little bit more pointed, just to like try to get as much information as I can. But the goal remains the same, which is, you know, in those first few weeks and months, what is your trajectory going to look like, right? Because if it looks like very positive, then you're probably going to be a great fit.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, this is, as we said before, this is just one of those things where you're always going to be able to look back and sort of be like, yeah, you know, it's hard to get this right, and I don't think we got it right on this candidate or that candidate. And as a result, I would hope that anyone who has done this for long enough sort of has that understanding in the back of their mind and sort of knows, it's like anyone that would tell me, it's like, oh, we have a perfect interview process and we only get the best of the best. It's like, no.
It's like someone telling you that they're a C++ expert. You're like, nobody can say that.
No.
The Dunning-Kruger effect means that if you know, if you think you're an expert, you're absolutely
not. Right here on the Dunning-Kruger curve, right?
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So.
Oh, boy. I mean, I've seen some very alternative approaches to hiring, interviewing and hiring. I think, I can't remember the name of the company, but somebody who we got in at a previous company, I think originally as a penetration tester, you know, like security consultant.
Yes.
He ran for a long time. Thomas Tachek, I think his name is. It just came to mind. He ran for a long time some like newsletter with like here's like a sort of brain teaser style challenge of like, can you hack this thing? And then if you did, you could email him the answer and he would send you the next one in the sort of the chain. And he did it, I believe, originally, and forgive me if he ever hears this and I've got it completely wrong, but it's something like this. He did this originally as just like this is a fun way to teach folks about security engineering and hacking and, you know, penetration testing, all those type of bits and pieces. But then he realized that by the end of it, anyone who'd got to like the 15th one was probably a very good security researcher type person, and maybe he should hire them,
right,
whoever they are. And so he started doing this, and some of the best employees that they brought on were people who had just been through this, and they were very non-traditional background people.
Yeah.
I think he said that there was one person who worked as like the IT person for a library in the middle of a rural area in the middle of nowhere. And again, I'm paraphrasing everything from memory. Yeah. 6-7 years ago, whatever. And it's like, there's no way that person without a degree who was just like fixing the computers in the library would have gotten a job under the normal circumstances of like the kind of interviews that would bring somebody in or even bring them into contact with, to even think that maybe I could apply for a job here.
No one gave him
the permission to apply for that job. And yet Thomas sort of emailed him and said, you're amazing, do you want a job? And it worked out brilliantly. And I think that's lovely. We all want the situation where we can widen the talent pool that we can pull from, and we can make it a more level playing field, because like it's not who you know at all at that point. I mean, obviously there's a bit of like whether you've got access to that.
Yeah,
kind of stuff, but I
love that.
It was an interesting story. I love the idea. Great. And he set up, I believe it set up a company to essentially productionize that approach to hiring. Okay. And he said literally their final interview process was someone would come in and the HR person would ask them like three questions only, like, what is your name, where do you live, kind of very very straightforward, and that was all the interview was like, are you a real human being, is effect. And I think that sounds great, and I think it worked for him because so much of it was individualistic, so much of it was consulting work, remote consulting work. Mm-hmm. I still think there's a bit, and this is where now we're into the there's a bit where you have to work with someone and you have to be able to interact with them on a personal basis. And you want to make sure that you're going to be productive as a unit of people working together. Perhaps you are going to be customer facing, in which case, you know, you have to be able to deport yourself with the customer in a way that doesn't cause issues as well.
Right.
So that obviously slightly takes the edge off of that approach. But I like the idea.
Yeah.
I like the idea in principle.
Yeah, I love that. And I mean, one of the things that is particularly compelling about that is not only does it work, which is the most important thing, but it has a nice sort of balance of cost. So one of the things that we, and we were just sort of saying this, think about a lot is like all the people that are participating in this interview process also have their day jobs that they actually need to do. Right. And all of the time that we're spending on this takes away from that, which is what we use to, you know, make payroll.
I mean, you think 6 hours for an individual candidate could easily be taken up in all of the things that happen.
Yeah.
Maybe even more than that.
Yeah.
And that's a whole working day for a human being at our company right. per candidate. You can't, that's not cheap.
Right. Exactly right. And you know, it's expensive for the candidates too, but like, especially when you have a lot of influx, that sort of the burden can sometimes disproportionately fall on the company. Especially because there's like deficiencies of scale there, right? Like the more candidates you have, the harder it gets to organize any one candidate. If you have one candidate a week, they're loaded up in your head. You know who they are. They're moving through the pipeline. You're keeping track of them. The more you get, the more those kinds of informal systems start to break down. The thing that I really like about this is that, you know, once he's got those problems, it's really easy to just be like, oh, I got a question from somebody. I'll check to see if their answer is right. I'll give them the next problem. That's like a minute, right?
Yep.
And it does sort of put a lot of the burden on the candidate to then solve the problem. Like,
of
it
course,
takes him,
which is another issue, right?
Right. But that's sort of like, if you're trying to like design these systems to be able to handle this, like that's, you want to be able to have those tools in your toolbox where you can say like, I'm going to take a minute to send you an email and you're going to work on it for an hour. And then I'm going to get a lot of signal back from that result, which then I can move you on to more higher touch processes where we're investing more time.
Right. Which is a little bit, I mean, so now we're going all over the place here. But like you mentioned, like the leak coding type thing. That is sort of what that is trying to do there. I mean, in mm-hmm. particular, my understanding is that it's the kind of thing that companies might be tempted to do around campus recruiting time, where there is a huge imbalance in power, where if your company is well-regarded enough to go onto a list somewhere that's on like a GitHub of some college, then maybe someone is just going to throw their resume at hundreds of companies.
Right.
Because it's cheap to do that these days. You don't have to print it out and hand it to people. You don't have to send it in the mail even. You just email it. And so you can make a massive list of companies you want to apply for. And you can be like, not even necessarily very committed to them. You're just throwing a wide net. And who wouldn't try that?
Oh,
I,
yeah.
I would.
But, yeah, yeah, yeah.
But that means that as an individual company, even one that's relatively small and not necessarily as well known as ours, gets thousands of applications from people that are graduating.
Right.
And it's not the case that every single one of those people wants absolutely to work at Aquatic, right? That's
right.
not necessarily the case. It's maybe like they like, I just want to work in finance or Chicago or wherever, right? There's just like you, some search term found you and why the heck not? And then it's kind of incumbent on us to filter them down to the few to say like, well, is this actually worth proceeding, or were you just having a laugh?
Right.
And
right.
having a laugh. Well,
Nobody's
having a laugh when you're looking for a job, right?
But you're looking for a job, and it makes sense. And I mean, certainly for those large companies, like I totally understand why they use LeetCode and all of these other tools to do this filtering. Like it is kind of inhumane and I hate it, but it's like, I totally understand why they do it. It makes sense for them. I'm not saying that they shouldn't do it. For me, the solution.
But I say it's a degree of scale compared to say the process that I was just describing with Thomas Tkaczek's stuff. You know, like it feels a little bit like it's the same in some ways. You know, you're pushing the burden back at the candidate to say you have to prove yourself a few times before I invest that little bit more time, and that can feel inhumane,
right,
very definitionally inhumane, right? Because it's almost automated. What was that? Sorry.
Don't discount the fact that it just feels cooler. Right? Like in his particular instance, the thing that he was doing was awesome, right? It's a security researcher. I'm giving you this crazy puzzles. You know, you could do a thing where you like sort of like put some Easter eggs in some places so you can find the email address. Like, don't discount the value of awesome, right? Like
that
is
a very
awesome,
good point.
Right?
That is a very good point.
Filling
but
out the
like
leak
so many
code
things,
for Facebook is not awesome.
No, that is true.
Yeah.
And these things also, I mean, like the solutions get posted and then you're back into the world of like, well, if you know where to look for the solution, then you can jump through the thing anyway.
Right.
So I think recruiting is really difficult.
It is really, really difficult.
On both sides,
yeah,
right?
It is.
I know we're fortunate to be on this side of the recruitment conversation.
Yeah, right now. But, you know, it's like we've both been in that world where it's like, you know, oh, okay, I guess I'm going to do some interviews this week. See how that goes.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Yeah. That was my personal anecdote. That was actually how I wound up at Dr. W.
Oh, yes.
Repco, is I was moving from Texas to Chicago, and I had a whole week blocked off that I took vacation for to come back to Chicago and interview with like a whole bunch of companies. And, you know, that was a very stressful week.
I bet.
Yeah. This was back in 2010. So obviously all these interviews were in person and they were in offices, and it's very different than the way we do things now. But
we do things these. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right. I know. I haven't really interviewed someone in person physically for a very long time.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Yeah. 2010 also for me at DOW. That was end of 2010. Mm-hmm. I had flown to Canada because I was doing something for, I was still working at Google at the time, and I was talking to DRW, but I wasn't really sure about it. And I certainly didn't want them to pay for me to fly internationally from the UK where I was living at the time, all the way over to Chicago, and then like put me up in a hotel and everything. That felt a bit much like I was committing to them, you know, like they were giving me something and then in return I would have to give them something kind of feeling. And I was not sold on the whole idea, but I was in Toronto or nearby Kitchener or wherever the heck the Google office was over there for something. And then it was felt like, well, it's just a little puddle jumper across the lake to get to Chicago. So, all right, I'll do it then. And then, yeah, it was a whole day. It was a Friday, which I was meeting a friend as far as Google was concerned. And right. I spent chatting to a whole bunch of folks, most of whom now are very good friends
of
mine.
Yeah, you did
meet
a bunch
of literally everybody
that day,
I interviewed
right?
with. Everyone I interviewed. So Nevin Lieber, Oren Miller.
Oh, my God.
All the people that we know and love and we still hang out with and different were in those interviews. It was a fun time.
Oh,
yeah.
That sounds great.
So anyway, that was, yeah, you started it with a personal anecdote, made me have to say one, so
no,
I think this is probably a place we should stop talking.
This is a great way to end it. Cool.
You've been listening to Two's Compliments, programming podcast by Ben Rady and Matt Godbold. Find the show transcript and notes at www.twoscompliment.org. Contact us on Mastodon. We are at twoscompliment@pachyderm.io. Our theme music is by Inverse Phase. Find out more at inversephase.com.